You're listening to The Stack, first broadcast on the 6th of February 2016 on Monocle 24. It's a country full of contrasts in its publishing sector, as Brazil gets set to host another sporting showpiece. It's once again found itself making headlines for some of the wrong reasons. It's a nation where the weeklies still matter, and the newsstands are never short of potential readers hungry for enlightening information and plenty of print diversion. We'll assess the state of Brazilian publishing today on The Stack. On today's programme, we're touching down upon the sunny shores of Brazil as we take a closer look at what makes the country's voracious readers want to flip open the pages of their favourite magazines.
For the case of Plus 55 and some others that are just so passionate about the actual object in itself, it's sort of besides the point to have it online, because you can only actually enjoy it if you have it in your hands.
Plus, as the Olympic Games draw closer, how are the nation's daily papers covering the various difficulties facing the country today?
The reason why I think so many columnists and covers of magazines focus on the political corruption is because they think that one of these days, my piece will bring the downfall of a president.
And later in the program, we'll leaf through some of our favourite magazine titles from across the nation. All that coming up on The Stack, Monocle 24's dedicated print industry review and analysis show. Hello and welcome to The Stack with me, Tom Edwards, sitting in for Tyler Brulé this week. I'm joined today by two people who know a thing or two about their home country. As a research associate for security and development at ISS, Antonio Sampaio spends much of his time analysing the impacts of organised crime, guerrilla groups and terrorism, and focusing on how insecurities can affect social and economic development. He joins me here in Studio One today. Antonio, welcome to The Stack. Good to have you with us. Also with me, a voice familiar to Monocle 24 listeners, someone with his finger firmly on the pulse of Brazilian culture, Monocle's own Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Fernando, welcome to you as well.
We'll, of course,
be leafing through a few Brazilian magazines a little later in the show. But first, it is, as I mentioned, an Olympic year. Brazil will be centre of the world's attention, but sadly it seems it's already the focus for some of the wrong reasons, with Zika virus continuing to have a devastating impact. Antonio, we've also seen plenty of ongoing political upheaval. We've seen corruption problems rumbling on. What's the mood like, particularly if we look at, say, you know, the Brazilian media depicting all of these challenges? How would you sum up the way that these challenges are presented to the domestic audience?
It's challenging for Brazilian media now to provide some uplifting images and topics for the population. I think the for instance, the weekly news magazines, they're switching between Zika virus and the corruption scandals. And the Brazilian media in particular has been very traditionally for many, many years, I would say even for a few decades, very eager to cover corruption. Mm. It sees itself as being one of its duties. And in fact, one of our presidents, Fernando Collor de Mello, was impeached in the early 90s after a cover article in Veja magazine. So corruption, you know, the dark side of the political scenario in Brazil has always been very evident in the Brazilian press, even more print than in television and radio. Mm. But now with the economic crisis and, you know, a combination of economic, political crisis, the Zika virus, there's just not enough good topics out there. So, for instance, this week, the topics in the cover of the magazines are unemployment and Zika virus. So you can choose which one you prefer.
Fernando, how much of a challenge do you think that is then for, you know, the print titles we like? I mean, we have a bit of a cliched and admittedly not always very accurate impression of Brazil as this people, everyone has such a sunshine disposition. But as Antonio describes there, plenty of challenging topics to cover. People, I guess, look to the media, as Antonio says, to be, I don't know, almost something of a moral compass at times.
True, but at the same time, I think the media, especially, you know, for example, I can give the example of Folha de São Paulo, one of the, I think, the largest daily in Brazil. They're almost masochists in a way, because I believe since 2 years' time, they have like a logo saying Brazil in crisis. And I think this happens every single day, you know, so it's, you know, of course, Brazil is in crisis, but I wonder if that's might be a bit too much as well to put this logo for 2 years in a row. So when this is going to be over. I think so Brazil is going to be in crisis forever or something like this.
And so what do you think about that? Obviously, it is a year, as we mentioned, with the Olympic Games in particular, such a focus. Is there a way for, I don't know, Dilma and maybe for, you know, corporations, companies, the media as well, to try and change the narrative a little bit for the country? What role do you think the media will play in trying to be more optimistic, or is it going to be not a fruitful task, at least for the time being?
I guess if you pose that question to many of the editors, especially in the main magazines and newspapers like Folha, Estado de São Paulo, they will say, well, we are moving that way. We are moving towards this more positive narrative. And the way we're moving is pushing for the impeachment of the president. That's the role that they see. You know, Brazilian newspapers and magazines, they have caused the downfall of very powerful political figures in Brazil. And the reason why I think so many columnists and covers of magazines focus on the political corruption is because they think that one of these days, my piece, this piece that I'm editing or this piece that I'm putting, will bring the downfall of a president. So that's how they see their role in pushing for improvements and everything. Mm. And I don't see a lot of effort to put nice little topics on the covers of magazines these days.
How does that sit with the, you know, the Brazilian, let's say, you know, your Brazilian civilian heads to his newsstand? Do they expect to see, do they want to see their paper being politicized? You know, we often talk about, oh, it's difficult in the UK to get something that's a very objective. Are people actually happy with that? Do they like to see papers, as Antonio was describing, with a clear agenda, even if it's to try and impeach the president?
I would say so, because, you know, for example, Veja, let's talk about Veja here, you know, it's not a magazine that I particularly like, but I respect because they sell more than a million copies a week. I mean, it's clearly a successful story. And, you know, they're quite, you know, right wing. And I think it's clear when you read Veja that they don't like the Workers' Party. Mm. I think they're talking to their public, which is the middle class in the major Brazilian cities, São Paulo and Rio de Janeiro, which were never particularly... they never particularly liked the Workers' Party anyway. Mm. And I have to say, you know, we were talking here that the print media, it is anti-government, but TV not so much, but not all Brazilians read magazines and newspapers. It is a considered number, you know, it's a big country, but the majority of Brazilians, they get their news from TV. That's the reality.
Now, Fernando, give us more of a sense. You talked a little bit about Newsstand and, you know, where people get their news from in Brazil. Is it the weeklies that are, you know, the real arbiters of taste? We already talked about the daily papers, Folha de São Paulo, which sell in big numbers. How would you sort of describe the way that the public, in general, maybe in those big urban centres, consume their print media? Is it all about the weeklies, dailies, or is it a bit of a mixed picture?
I think the weeklies has a major importance. I mean, let's just look at sales. I think Veja is still now, even though we're in crisis, we're growing negatively, it's still selling more than a million copies every week, which I think is very successful. The second biggest Brazilian magazine, which is Época, which I know Antonio likes it, and I do like it as well. And I think they sell more or less 500,000 copies. Mm. And Folha de São Paulo, which, you know, I think it sells very well for Brazil, but their average circulation is around 350,000 copies a day. So that's the main form of consumption. I think you see everybody with Veja in their hands, or Época, or there are others. There's Isto É, Carta Capital. They sell in lesser numbers, but they're also very important.
Still key players. And what's the way that people like to consume them? I always like to think of the sort of, you know, romantic stroll down to the kiosk or to the newsstand to pick them up. You know, what are the beverages that people are drinking? Are these subscription models? Do people go and pick them up from, you know, street vendors? What's the sort of the usual way that people consume their media, or their favoured ways at least?
Well, actually, for example, Veja and Época, a lot of people subscribe to it, but I think, you know, I think the Brazilian newsstands, I think they're quite charming. I don't know if you agree with me, Antonio, you know, because they're usually, it's not like a shop. They're usually like proper kiosk where you can find in France or Italy, but have like a special format, and you can buy, you know, bingo stuff. There's so many things you can buy in a Brazilian news agent, a chip for your mobile. Yeah. You know, it's a nice place to chat as well. Yeah. Usually you have a relationship with the guy of the news agent. I have a story to tell. I mean, the Brazilian Playboy used to be very good in the old times. And I was just very young, like 14, maybe that's a crime. I hope I'm not saying nothing on air. But I created a relationship with the owner, and he used to sell Playboy for me, you know, and it was not legal, but, you know, we created a nice...
So this is actual, that's proper social media,
exactly,
if you will.
Yeah.
Is there a bit of a social dynamic at the heart, Antonio, of the newsstand thing? We talked about the relationship that readers have with their papers. Did the editors and journalists, you mentioned your own training, is it almost taught as a... I don't know, as a kind of a social engagement as much as a literary or a journalistic one?
In the sense that we know that the Brazilian print media is still very traditional in their style. So the weeklies, they are still very newsy. Mm. So they don't use a lot of analysis in the sense of, for instance, an economist. Or there is one magazine that I'm sure that Fernando will mention, which is Piauí, which does more of a New Yorker style of cool writing and more, you know, free-flowing storytelling. But the weeklies are still, you know, they see themselves as, in order to be respected as a magazine, as a journalistic product, I have to be very traditional and, you know, there's the lead, there's the sub-lead, and then what happened, when, what. So I see the style is still a bit old-fashioned. Mm. But I think that the people just develop some relationships with their favorite magazines in the nice little areas of middle-class suburbs in big cities. I think that's where you find the really nice new kiosks.
We'll have more from Antonio and from Fernando as we continue to delve into the newsstand scene across Brazil later in the program. For now, though, on the stack, we're going to head to Fernando's hometown of Sao Paulo. It's the hub of Brazil's fashion business, and with the major exception of Rio's Globo media empire, home to Brazil's main newspapers and magazines. But these are hard times, as we know, for publishing, with a number of magazines closing down over the past few years. The Editora Abril stable has been hit particularly hard. Once a mighty publishing house, it's been forced to sell off and close magazines left, right and centre since 2013, with many journalists as well losing their jobs. Despite, or perhaps because of that, there's a small but growing independent magazine scene in the city. Our Claire Rigby met up with the young Sao Paulo editor and fashion stylist Anna Weiner, who founded a new independent fashion magazine last year, named after the dialing code for Brazil, +55.
So Anna, you've been working in the fashion industry for a good few years here in Sao Paulo. I know you worked both in-house and freelance, and mainly as a stylist, is that right?
Yes, that's right. I started out at Harper's Bazaar and then moved on to El Brazil. When I started styling, I took off as a freelance.
Looking at the Brazilian magazine industry, looking at a Sao Paulo newsstand, it looks absolutely booming. There's hundreds of magazines and dozens, by the looks of it, of fashion magazines. You've got the big ones, Vogue, Elle, Marie Claire, all of those. And also what looks like quite a blooming independent magazine scene. How do you see the scene overall at the moment here in Brazil?
I think as globally it is, the mainstream fashion magazines are definitely taking a hit, either in terms of print run or sales or advertisement. They definitely are. You can see it. It's palpable. You can see, you can notice that if you take a magazine from today and one from 3 years ago, the amount of advertisers has gone way down between one and the other. And because of that, they have to operate with much less money than they did even a couple of years ago. So if initially they would have to make a magazine with 200,000 reais, which is about $50,000, now they would have to do it for $20,000, about 80,000 reais. And the editorial staff has gone down, so people have to do more work. And in consequence of that, they're less inclined to be creative about stuff. They just want to get things done. So you can tell that magazines mainly like Harper's Bazaar and L'Officiel have used basically the same teams, the same stylists, the same photographers, and they look pretty much the same.
What are the magazines that you think are doing best at the moment? The major players, we've got Vogue, Harper's Bazaar here in Brazil, Elle, L'Officiel. What are some of the other main players, and which are the ones that you think are doing best, both in terms of economy and also in terms of creativity?
In terms of economy, I think probably the Condé Nast titles are probably doing better. They found creative ways to make more money. So that would be Vogue and Glamour here. Glamour has basically hijacked their staff into being brand ambassadors, is a nice way to put it. But so product placement goes beyond just the magazine and the pages. It goes to social media. It goes to the editor-in-chief and the fashion editor. They all have to sell the brand 24 hours a day through their own personal pages. And they've become part of the celebrity culture they portray in their pages. Vogue, for example, has expanded internationally in terms of creatives and talent. So they fly in models from all around the world and also photographers and stylists, and they have access to brands from all around the world. So they use that to expand their influence in Brazil and set down their foot as a fashion dictator.
So knowing everything you know about the industry and some of the problems that it's faced, you've started your own magazine. So we're here looking at this. It's a Plus55 magazine, both a glossy fashion magazine and an independent magazine. What made you decide to start the magazine? And also, you know, what have been some of the challenges in putting it out? You've got one issue out here, and I know the second issue is in the pipeline, isn't it?
Yes, some people would call me, you know, a daredevil to start my own magazine in the environment of the publishing industry in Brazil and worldwide. What happened was I was having all these ideas for shoots and ideas for texts, and they weren't being well embraced by the mainstream fashion magazines. And this started bubbling up throughout the years until it got to a turning point where I really just needed this creative outlet.
What about some of these independent titles? We've been looking at some really gorgeous magazines. We're looking at your one here, Plus55, but there's also some other really interesting looking new ones. We're looking at Fort magazine, a beautiful men's magazine, mostly photography. What do you make of the more independent sector of magazines, and which are the interesting ones?
It's still very in its infancy, independent publications. It's still very hard to do here. People don't really understand it, especially the economics parts, the financial parts. They don't understand what we're doing. But there have been some magazines to rise and to pop up. Fort is definitely one of them. They just finished their crowdfunding 100% for the second issue. There's also Made in Brazil magazine, is also a men's magazine, photography that started. It's a one-man magazine, Juliano Corbetta. And he started 5 years ago, and now it's internationally acclaimed.
Looking at some of these new independent magazines, Fort, Sem Número, the ones that you've just been talking about, they don't seem to have many ads, and some of them don't have any ads at all. And I'm wondering how they fund themselves. And also, you know, is it a kind of magazine as art object, or what? You know, how does it work when there's a magazine with no ads in it whatsoever?
I think it works better if there's no ads, but that's an utopian world to live in. Yes, they're definitely collectibles, most of them. They're definitely supposed to be a piece of art in themselves. And how they fund themselves is still a little iffy right now. We're still trying to figure things out. Brands don't really understand. We don't think the traditional model of advertisement works in these cases. So right now, we have a mixture of sponsors, either brands or people that believe in the magazine, and crowdfunding, which has been working, but it's very stressful.
Are these magazines online too? Are these new print publications also making efforts to get themselves online, or are they not bothering so much with that?
I think it depends. There are some that are online as well, and you can read them and view them online. But for the case of Plus55 and some others that are just so passionate about the actual object in itself, it's sort of besides the point to have it online, because you can only actually enjoy it if you have it in your hands.
Claire Rigby there in conversation with Anna Weiner from Plus55 magazine. This is The Stack on Monocle 24, and we'll be back after this.
On the menu, we explore the delicious, diverse and eminently digestible world of food, drink and hospitality every week. Join me, Marcus Hippi, as I meet everyone from the bakers to the makers who are redefining the culinary landscape.
Many people think that it might be gamey somehow because these are hairy animals that have horns, but it's quite the opposite. I think the milk has a cleaner, sweeter flavor than cow milk.
We'll also head to Kenji's kitchen for a roundup of restaurant reviews, interviews with top chefs and trade secrets with our Asia editor at large, Kenji Hall, in Tokyo and beyond.
The beer market has been changing rapidly for some time now. It seems like almost every month, a new pub that specializes in craft beer is opening.
All that and even a dinner party soundtrack recommendation, so your ears are catered for as well as your belly. A healthy serving of the finest free-range fare to sate your radio appetite each week. That's the menu on Monocle 24.
You're listening to The Stack here on Monocle 24 with me, Tom Edwards. My guests here in Studio One today are Monocle's Fernando Augusto Pacheco and Antonio Sampaio, Research Associate for Security and Development at ISS. We're looking, of course, at the Brazilian magazine scene. Let's have more of a look at the picture there. As we mentioned a little earlier, the role of the weekly news title is still very important for Brazilian readers. Culturally speaking, though, Fernando, I'll start with you. What are some of the main titles that jump out? You and Antonio have mentioned a couple already, and we've got a very nice spread of magazines here. Maybe just pick out one or two and give us some thoughts.
Well, I think I'll start with my favourite, perhaps. It's Piauí. Actually, the name of the magazine, I think it's quite beautiful because it's the name of a state in the northeast of Brazil, Piauí, which is actually one of the poorest as well. So this magazine was founded in 2006 by a documentary maker, João Moreira Salles. And as Antonio said, it is the Brazilian New Yorker, but with a different format. It's quite big. And the paper, it does feel like a newspaper somehow. Mm. Actually, may I say, it's similar for those who read Monocle Mediterraneo or Opino. Mm. There's this kind of similar vibe where you can take to the beach and, you know, I think it's not going to hurt the pages. And, you know, there's quite long articles. For example, they did a very long article about the power of the radio station nowadays. You know, they have colonists like Raquel Sherazade, you know, which became a strong voice for the conservatives in Brazil, for example. But it was such a nice story, like around 10 pages. And I said, I'm not going to be interested 10 pages about a radio network in São Paulo. But it was fascinating. And can I tell about my favorite
Please
segment?
Please do, Fernando. Yeah.
It's the Diary of Dilma. Of course, it's not the real President Dilma.
What a scoop.
But for example, here, yeah, page 28. I just, it's so funny. So for example, she said on the 30th of December, I'm going to spend New Year with my color nude dress. I'm tired of white. I think it's a bit tacky. But, you know, there's all this kind of funny things.
So it's quite playful. There's a sort of satirical element as well. Now, tell me a little bit, maybe Antonio will come to you. You know, I see here that Fernando has a number of titles which, you know, our international listeners will be familiar with, whether it's, you know, Harper's Bazaar or Rolling Stone, I think I can spot there. I don't know, how much of Brazil is captured in the Brazilian editions? Do you think they're sort of represent a very faithful portrait of what the country really means, what it is to be Brazilian in the covers of those international editions?
Yeah, for some reason, I never really read a lot of the English language franchises that are in Brazil. But I was just flipping through Rolling Stones, for instance, and the magazine I have this week, is actually all about black celebrities in Brazil and the role of, you know, black people in Brazil, which is, you know, a very Brazilian topic, a very current topic, especially because it's still a kind of controversial issue. Until recently, black actresses could only get roles as domestic cleaners and things like that in the soap operas. And so it's they do make an effort, and I think many times they do work.
And Fernando, I mean, you've got, I think, Harper's Bazaar there again as well. You know, I know you're a big magazine fan, as we all are here at The Stack, but how do you think these fit into, you know, how different are they? Do you think they'll surprise readers of other international editions, for example?
That's a very good question, Tom. I think some of them, but Antonio is right. And I think, to be honest, I mean, some of those franchises are not worth reading. I don't want to say bad things. For example, the Brazilian Vogue, which is, you know, it's quite a sizable magazine. I think, you know, they have good quality, good photo shoots. But sometimes I think it's embarrassing how not Brazilian is the Brazilian Vogue. It speaks to this kind of international Brazilian who goes to London, New York. I mean, if you are that international, probably you'd buy the Vogue UK or the Vogue France. It does lack some tropicalism. I don't know. It lacks the Brazilian soul. And that's why I chose the Brazilian Harper's Bazaar. I think they are doing a good job. I don't read it every month. But for example, this January edition, and I have to say, January editions, they're quite slim, you know, so it's not perhaps the best month editorially. But they chose, again, a black model. And I think that's quite a statement as well, because Brazil is still quite racist in a way. Because if you read the Brazilian Vogue, I mean, you think Brazil, you know, we just have kind of tall blonde women, you know, which is not the case. We do have some of those as well, but if you read only Brazilian Vogue, that's not the case. And you know, they're talking about 7 new Brazilian brands. It does have a more Brazilian vibe, so
I guess, you know, it's light and shade. It's the same thing that we see everywhere. As we look across the whole sort of media marketplace, Antonio, what do you think? Do you think there's anything that's really, really missing? I mean, obviously we mentioned the challenges that face certain, even some of these big media empires. There are problems that are well documented all around the world. Do you think there's anything missing? Are there things you'd like to see more of, whether it's, you know, independent voices or voices from left or right? Or do you think that, generally speaking, most voices are reasonably well represented? Maybe if we look particularly in those big urban centres we've been talking about.
Yeah, I'm kind of biased because I'm very geeky and I like to see very, you know, political, very dense stuff. Mm. And the weeklies, they are quite old-fashioned and there's not really a difference between reading a weekly and reading a newspaper article. It's not really different. It's very dense, very informative, very fact-based. So it's like this happened and or you get the Veja, which is more of a, you know, a very editorialized type of analysis. I'd like to see something more like, you know, The Statesman in Britain or, you know, a Newsweek or Time in the US, in which you get the analysis, you get very in-depth, but you don't get the obvious stuff. Your cover article is not just about the Zika or about corruption. It's about really interesting, more in-depth political and economic trends going on in the world.
There is one magazine that actually...
Fernando, what do you think? You look like you were going to volunteer a possible solution to to Antonio's quest.
A solution that, you know, I think is one of our favorite magazines, actually, that we have here, Super Interessante, which even though I think it's good for if you're a bit geeky, because it's... it's just like a science magazine. I remember I used to buy things as a kid. But I think recent years they've been talking about quite important topics for Brazilian society, you know, like abortion. So maybe they are kind of being this kind of editorial... Not editorialized, but, you know, they do some analysis that the weeklies don't do sometimes. I think it's a good example, perhaps.
It is a good example. And actually reminds me of... I always liked Vanity Fair. So there was this kiosk that sold all these amazing international titles that cost a fortune, but I used to buy a few of them and I always bought Vanity Fair. And Vanity Fair, for some time, especially after the economic crisis in 2008, was the best magazine for economic news. And Super Interessante, which emerged as a scientific, kind of scientific American in Brazil. And my mom subscribed to that for me since I was about 8 or perhaps 10, because she wanted to encourage me. And I was flipping that one of these days, and it's, you know, some of the sections are still the same. And they have become, they have evolved into this more political titles, more political articles, and more, you know, controversial stuff. There's not just science. So they've become, they fill this gap of cool, interesting, out-of-the-box pieces.
Excellent.
They're doing well as well because they have special versions like this one I have in hands. 99 films that you need to see right now.
That's pretty helpful. A prime
Very
for
helpful.
Films.
Yeah.
What could we do without that?
Exactly. Well, we ended with that's an upbeat note on which to end. I'm afraid that the clock is against us and there we must leave our analysis of Brazil's publishing scene. Thanks very much to my guest today, Monocle's own Fernando Augusto Pacheco, and to Antonio Sampaio. Gentlemen, thanks both for being with us this week here on The Stack. And that is indeed all we have time for on this week's programme. Thanks to our producer, Ben Ryland, and editor, Claire Urban. Comments or queries are welcome. Drop us a note at info@monocle.com. Don't forget to join us next Saturday at the very same time. If you're missing us before then, you can catch up. Head to monocle.com and delve into the archive of past editions of the programme. That's all for this week's show. Goodbye.